I'm Rick Gamley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Governor Hassan will need to prime her pen this week with the ending of the legislative session on Thursday. Some 200 bills on a huge array of subjects are headed her way for signature. Hassan's already signed measures on a few issues, including raising the gas tax and expanding Medicaid. But as of this week, the governor will have less company at the State House for those signatures, as lawmakers have largely gone home for the summer, many with an eye toward re-election this fall. And when a new legislature convenes in January, some longtime key members won't be found under the Golden Dome, including two former Senate presidents and the current House Speaker. Today in The Exchange, a legislative look back. We sit down with a panel of House and Senate leaders on what passed this year, what didn't, and what to expect perhaps on the next go round. Let's hear from you, too. What do you see as the legislature's major accomplishments of the past 6 months? What's your biggest disappointment? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. With us in studio is Lou D'Alessandro, Democratic Senator from Manchester, longtime member of the New Hampshire Senate. Senator D'Alessandro, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Laura, always a pleasure. Nice to see you.
And Jean Chandler is also here, Republican representative from Bartlett and the House Minority Leader. Representative Chandler, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Good morning.
Joining us by phone is Jeb Bradley, Republican Senator from Wolfboro and Majority Leader for the Senate. Senator Bradley, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Laura. Good morning.
And also with us, Terry Norelli, Democratic representative from Portsmouth and Speaker of the House, one of several leaders who will not be returning, as I said, in the fall. Speaker Norelli, thank you for being here. We appreciate
it. Well, thanks for having me.
Well, and I'll start with you, Speaker Norelli. As you know, the legislative session runs on a two-year cycle, and this one was the first session in well over a decade, almost a decade and a half, with true divided government. How did that shape what happened at the State House?
Well, I'm grateful that Governor Hassan led the effort to have bipartisan issues and deal in a bipartisan way with issues. And I think as Speaker, I tried to help with that starting on day one with mixing up the members, Democrats and Republicans, sitting among each other on the House floor. And so I think it's been a good session overall.
You know, can you talk a little bit about that? Because someone was telling me about that last week. How does it work normally, Speaker Norelli, and how did you change that?
Well, you know, we talk about across the aisle, meaning Democrats or Republicans are across the aisle, because typically there is a virtual aisle where Democrats sit on one side and Republicans on the other. I decided that it was time to go back to the how it was done decades ago, which is Democrats and Republicans all mixed up on the House floor. Gives us an opportunity, I think, to chat with some people perhaps we wouldn't, and form relationships across the aisle. And in fact, that's what the legislature is all about, forming relationships.
Now, that's really interesting. How did that go over when you first announced it, given the partisanship of the previous session?
Well, there certainly were some folks that didn't like the idea, some folks on both Democrats and Republicans that didn't like the idea. But I think it's proved to be workable for leadership and enjoyable for the members.
Senator Bradley, I want to go to you, too. Again, looking back, it's been at least 10, if not almost 15 years since we had divided government, Republican Senate, Democratic House. How do you think that shaped the way the year turned out?
Well, I think that from our perspective, what we wanted to make sure that we focused on were measures that improved the economy, that protected taxpayers, and made sure that government didn't grow in an exponential fashion. And we had a budget that in the Senate was voted 24 to nothing. It met the needs of the state, but it didn't raise the single tax or a fee. And I think when you look back, not just on 2014, but 2013, you know, that bipartisan budget agreement was one of our shining moments, if you will. And so far, you know, while the revenues and the expenditures are very close, we are just barely meeting those revenue targets. So, I think that, again, there was an awful lot of focus on a lot of issues, but it always comes down to jobs, protecting taxpayers, and spending taxpayer money wisely.
Well, and there were a lot of issues debated over the past year. And as you alluded to, Senator Bradley, the first half of the session is about the budget, but the second half is about all the other interesting stuff. I'll start with you, Senator Bradley, but want to hear from everybody. What do you see, just pick one for now, if you could, please, as your biggest accomplishment this year?
Well, I think, and you said there were some things that were somewhat under the radar. We passed an awful lot of energy-related legislation. Senate Bill 245 that was sponsored by my good friend from Meredith, Jeannie Forrester, is reforming the Site Evaluation Committee. It will give much more public input to the siting of energy facilities. It'll establish a public interest standard. So that will, I think, better protect property owners. We also passed legislation that was sponsored by Representative David Borden that will further allow the Public Utilities Commission to pursue the possible divestiture of PSNH's remaining generation assets. I think the time has come to do that. Customers will benefit. The entire system will benefit. And as part of that bill, we also passed protections for property owners that are facing large windmill developments, especially in the Newfound Lake area. This was long overdue. So I think, there was a lot of discussion about Northern Pass and burying Northern Pass. I guess you would say that was something I was disappointed in, that we didn't make more progress there. But overall, I think we really served the public and protected the public with this energy-related legislation.
I'll definitely ask all of you your biggest disappointments of the past 6 months, but biggest accomplishments. Gene Chandler, how about you? When you walk away from this past 6 months, what do you feel best about?
A couple things. Obviously, being in the minority on our side in the House, we set our sights a little lower on accomplishments. From our standpoint, a Republican standpoint, I think one of our accomplishments was during the budget process, we had some concerns with the amount of revenues that were being projected and some of the measures in there. And looking at our Republican colleagues in the Senate, we offered 8 or 9 amendments on the floor, none of which passed in the House, but all of which were eventually adopted as part of the Senate budget. And I'll say that every Republican voted against the budget in the House. So from a sense of accomplishment, I guess we were able to get our message out on what we thought was an appropriate budget level. Other issues, I think some of the domestic violence bills that we passed this year, making a crime domestic animals as part of domestic violence thing. So some of those issues, which are, I think, exceedingly important in today's time. So those were some of the positive things.
Yeah,
so
those got a lot of support.
Those, right? Yeah.
Lots of bipartisan.
As they should have.
Yeah. And you also were sponsor of a bill that we talked about earlier on this show, a hike safe card. And that was sort of your baby, wasn't it? And that passed.
It's been a long while, and Senator D'Alessandro's been working. I think he's been at all the committee meetings and studies over the last 4 or 5 years maybe on that. So, yes, I think it's good that it passed. I will say it once again, as we said right through this is not the answer, and it wasn't intended to be the final answer. It's hope that it will help and start us off with the committee will still be meeting to come up with other alternatives, but I think this is a positive step towards getting the people other than the hunters and fishermen who shouldn't be paying for these when they aren't involved in most of these rescues in getting the appropriate parties to help pay. And now it'll just be seen if the hiking community takes advantage of this voluntary effort and does reach out and embrace it and help the Fish and Game Department.
Okay, and biggest accomplishments, you too, Senator D'Alessandro.
I think we had two that were fundamental to the fiscal stability of the state of New Hampshire. One was the MET compromise, absolutely critical.
The Medicaid enhancement tax, the hospital tax. Right. And that's big. That just happened last week.
Right. And I was on the committee of conference on that bill. And without that bill, we would have had an unstable budget, no question about that. And based on the court case, we looked at the fact that we may have to refund $200 million. So the MET compromise, good for the hospitals, good for the state. And even though it's a 4-year plan, it will have to be revisited as all of these things are revisited. It made sense to get this done. It's good for the state, good for the hospitals, as I said. The other thing is the expansion of health care.
The Medicaid expansion.
Right,
the
Medicaid
Affordable
expansion.
Care Act.
And I think the Senate did it, again, remarkably well. It was a bipartisan situation. I happened to be on the committee conference on that one. was on the committee that put that together. And when you can provide health insurance for 50,000 more people in the state of New Hampshire, I think it's a wonderful thing. And given the use of the emergency room, particularly my city, we have Manchester, we have both Elliott and CMC, where the emergency rooms are just loaded with people, and it's health care.
Don't have insurance.
Right. But it's health care dispensed at the highest possible cost. And this should alleviate this to some extent. So I think those were real accomplishments for this legislature that had to be done. There wasn't any choice. They had to be done. And they were done. And it took pain and suffering. I think got to give kudos to Senator O'Dell, Senator Bradley, Senator Morse. Senator Larson signed off on the bill. These were very, very significant, and the House concurred, which was very, very important for the state.
Well, and speaking really, I know that Medicaid expansion and the hospital tax compromise are huge accomplishments in your book as well.
Absolutely.
What else would you add to your own list?
Well, I would definitely echo the Medicaid enhancement tax, the expansion of Medicaid expansion and the domestic violence protections. But I think there are a couple big ones also that were left out. I think that it's critically important to our economy to have a safe and a modern transportation infrastructure. And I'm very pleased. I know the House recognized the crisis state of our roads and bridges in 2013 when we passed an increase in the road toll. And this year, working together, we got some Republican support in the Senate. Unfortunately, not Republican support in the House, but we are able to have a small increase in the road toll that'll modernize our infrastructure and create jobs.
A 4-cent increase in the gas tax.
That's right. And the other one I think that's really important is paycheck equity for women. While we have a law that says that there can't be discrimination, there have been roadblocks and loopholes that prevent women from actually seeking justice. And so the paycheck equity bill will allow women to seek justice. And it means that women and families will be getting higher incomes and more fair.
All right. We will talk more after a short break, and I'll ask all of you some of your biggest disappointments of this past year. We'll also take your calls, 1-800-892-6477. What bills or issues were you watching at the legislature this year? What do you think the legislature's biggest accomplishments and disappointments were? Join us. We'll be back in a moment.
It's 9:19. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Good morning. I'm David Darman. Support this news service by becoming a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle at the $1,000 level. When you do, current Circle members Tillman and Sylvia Gerngross and Barbara and Dick Couch will add $500 to your gift. Your money goes further today when you join the NHPR Leadership Circle. Visit the support page at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from the law firm of Rath, Young & Pignatelli, serving the business and nonprofit community. National impact uniquely New Hampshire, on the web at rathlaw.com, and the Brattleboro Retreat's Stand Up to Stigma initiative to dispel myths about mental illness, online at brattlebororetreat.org/standup.
Wonderful. Stand by.
This is NHPR. It's 10:20.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, lawmakers look back at the challenges and accomplishments of the last legislative year. The session wrapped up late last week. It opened in January. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. How would you rate the work of the legislature over the past 6 months? The major accomplishments, things that got done, the things you wish had gotten done? Join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests are Jeb Bradley. He's a Republican senator from Wolfboro, majority leader for the Senate. Gene Chandler, Republican representative from Bartlett, House minority leader. Lou D'Alessandro, longtime member of the state Senate and a Democrat from Manchester, and Terry Norelli, Democratic Representative from Portsmouth and Speaker of the House. And all of you, let's go to our listeners. Here's Dennis, who says, my greatest disappointment with the legislature is that the Senate blocked an opportunity to set New Hampshire on the right side of history by repealing the death penalty. Dennis says, this state and this country remain part of an increasingly isolated group that maintain the primitive practice of state-sponsored killing. Dennis, thanks for the email, because Senator Bradley, I turn to you first. This was a big debate this year. Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, clearly it was a big debate, and it died in the Senate on a 12-12 vote. This is a vote of conscience. There was no attempt by Senate leadership to influence anybody. Senator D'Alessandro and I agreed that there are some crimes. For instance, that home invasion in Mount Vernon a couple of years ago, some crimes that are just so heinous that the death penalty in very limited circumstances is warranted. When you kill an officer of the court, a police officer, a judge, something like that, our statute is extraordinarily narrow, which is why the death penalty has never been implemented in 75 years in New Hampshire. So I think that, you know, if there were questions about innocence or guilt in New Hampshire, or about the wrong application of it, or things like that, it might be a different circumstance. But I think we have a good law. It stood the test of time. And again, there are some crimes that are just that heinous that the death penalty, at least in my view and in the view of 12 senators, was warranted. And I have to, you know, give kudos to my good friend Senator D'Alessandro for, you know, maintaining his commitment to protecting the police officers of our state. And there's no accident that they were very involved in it, because they expect the legislature to have their back.
Well, Speaker Norelli, I know you're on the other side of this issue. The House came pretty close this time. Remind us what happened.
Actually,
the House passed it. Yes.
The vote in the House was actually significant in support of repealing the death penalty. The House has passed repeal in the past. Like the Senate, this is not a partisan issue, but it is a deeply held issue. And passionate issue for many people. I think this time around you saw people like a former attorney general, a former chief justice, and even the partner of Officer Briggs, who came out in strong support of repeal. I think the studies, for me personally, the studies definitely show that it's not a deterrent, that it doesn't save money, that families do not their loved ones are not returned to them. And quite frankly, for many people, it is akin to state sanctioned murder. And so I think it's something that people feel really strongly about, and will continue to have that debate in this state.
Well, and I'm going to leave it aside for now, because I'm sure we'll be doing programs on it in the future. And we certainly did over these past 6 months. I think, Speaker Norelli, when I said it came close, obviously, I knew that the House passed death penalty repeal. I was getting mixed up, Senator D'Alessandro, with the casino bill, which I'm guessing is your number one disappointment for the
number
year.
Number one disappointment. I've been on this case for 16 years. We lose it by one vote, 173.
Which was the closest ever in the House,
173,
right?
173 to 172. And, you know, here's the amazing thing. The House passes keno, the most addictive form of gambling. The most addictive form of gambling. And it passes the House. Casino, where you gamble like every 3 seconds.
I didn't vote for that either.
Well, as I look at Gino, I say he didn't vote. But my God, you pass keno and you reject job creation. You reject economic recovery at a time when we need both, when you need private investment in the state of New Hampshire. I just can't believe it. It was my greatest disappointment.
Sure.
I was right up there in the balcony when the number came up, 172 to 172, and the Speaker pro tem cast the deciding vote, 173 to 172.
Well, it was amazing. And here's my question for you, Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
And I do want to hear from Representative Chandler and get his take on the gambling and why it was so close and why it always goes down in the House. But my question for you, Senator D'Alessandro, is at what point do you give up? Because you have been working on this for a decade and a half.
Well, if we could go to the ghost of Larry Pickett, we could say, Larry, when do you give up? And he would say, never. You never give up. You never give up the good fight. And I think that when 70% of the people in the state of New Hampshire support it, maybe one day the House will listen to the people. I would like to have it as a referendum. I'd like it on the ballot. Let's put it on the ballot. And we have a, we can put a non-binding referendum on the ballot. We're not a referendum state. But it, that, that particular subject matter could be put on the ballot. Let the people vote on it. I go around to all of my communities, and people stop me on the street, and they say, what is wrong with the state of New Hampshire? You can't pass gambling. And, of course, we gamble 365 days a year here. We have charitable, the lottery and charitable gaming. Charitable gaming opens up everywhere. So, you know, it's an amazing situation to me. But I take my solace from Larry Pickett, who fought forever to get the lottery passed. Forever. Finally got it done. So maybe one of these days we'll deliver.
It was close, Representative Chandler. But it didn't fly.
Fairly close,
yeah. What do you think? I mean, is the tide finally moving in Senator D'Alessandro's favor?
The vote was close on a couple of other votes, too. I think the one vote margin, there were a lot of other factors at play with some amendments that people wanted to bring up and things like that. So I think the margin is probably actually closer to 20 to 25 votes against it. But the one vote was a little abnormal, I think, because of other reasons that people wanted to vote that way. But nonetheless, it was still one vote. I'm sure it'll keep coming back as long as my good friend is sitting over. We've been on the opposite sides of this issue. I have a magazine cover, New Hampshire Business Profiles. From when was that? Back in 1998?
Yeah, a long time ago.
When we're on there. So it's an issue. And even when I was Speaker, or when I've been the minority leader or even sometimes the majority leader, it's never been an issue that we have taken on, per se, as leadership. It's been a conscience vote in the House, and because there are many areas of the state where people strongly support it, but there are many areas where people don't support it. So it'll be out there. I think most Republicans, I think the one thing that we were united on for the most part, even if some people were pro-gambling, was not making it part of the budget. To rely on it in the budget process, we felt, was not a good road to be going down, at least until there was some kind of a track record on it. So,
all right, let's go back to
Laura,
our listeners. Oh, go ahead,
I would like to just add, you talked about things that are under the radar, and we're talking about gambling, but there is one bill that passed, and it passed with overwhelming support, Democrats and Republicans, House and Senate, and that was a bill that Senator D'Alessandro mentioned, the charitable gambling that goes on. And so we did pass stronger regulations for charitable gambling, stronger background checks, new financial record keeping, and clarifying and strengthening the what are called the redemption slots. And that was something that was under the radar, but clearly had broad support.
Let's go back to our listeners, and then I want to ask a couple more of you about your biggest disappointments. And I thought that was what you would say, Senator D'Alessandro. The phone number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477.
Right.
Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. From Portsmouth, Les is calling in. Hi, Les, you're on the exchange. Les, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Les, go ahead, you're on the exchange.
Thanks. I'm originally from Massachusetts, where they passed the casino bill, but every town that they want to put a casino in, it always gets shut down. So it seems like they passed it, but it's not going to go anywhere because every town says not in my backyard. So I'm not really for or against it, but I just don't see the point at this point because I don't feel like any town in New Hampshire is going to want one in their town. They're going to be for it for the money, but I don't feel like they're going to really want it in their town. I was just curious what everybody thought.
No, yeah. Les, it's an interesting point. And we haven't heard from Senator Bradley in a little bit, but go ahead, Senator D'Alessandro,
real quickly. Well, I think the caller is misinformed. Salem voted 80% to have a casino, 80%. Seabrook has voted for it. Belmont has voted for it. Any town where a non-binding referendum has been issued or has been brought to the public has always voted for it. Derry even voted for it. So people in New Hampshire are very anxious to do it, to be honest with you.
Senator Bradley, I want to go to you, too, as we talk about disappointments. Thanks, Les, for the call. Senator D'Alessandro, disappointed casinos. Our emailer, Dennis, disappointed that New Hampshire didn't repeal the death penalty. What about you, Senator Bradley? What do you wish had not happened this year?
Well, let me just touch base on the gambling situation for a second. I think that with all the states around us toward expanded gambling and failures of casinos.
He's breaking up.
Like that. If we wag.
Yeah, Senator Bradley, I think I'm going to go to one of our other guests for a moment and try and reestablish your phone line. I'm really sorry about that. How about you, Speaker Norelli? Other things that you wish didn't happen this year?
What I wish did happen this year was the passage of the increase in the minimum wage. Obviously, the House passed it along party lines, and the Senate killed it along party lines. But I think that's something that helps to build an economy that works for everybody. I think it enhances economic security for women and for their families. And a majority of the states in our country already have minimum wages that are higher than the federal. And of the 18 states in our country that where the cost of living is higher than the average, all but just a couple, including New Hampshire, have already increased their minimum wage above the federal limit. It's supported by a wide majority of citizens, and I certainly think that this is something that would help our economy, help individuals, and actually help the bottom line at businesses, too, because those who are low income that would benefit from this are going to turn around and spend that money right away at the very businesses that are on Main Street in your town.
Well, Speaker Chandler, sorry, you used to be Speaker Chandler.
He's Speaker forever.
former Speaker Chandler, Representative Chandler. I'm guessing that this was a good thing from your point of view, that the minimum wage didn't go up.
Well, we didn't support it, certainly. It has opposition has been, and it'll always be the argument one way or the other, no question, but opposition is that it's not particularly good for businesses, especially the ones we have in this state. Very few people would be eligible or actually on minimum wage. It would affect a lot of part-time high school employments, a lot of certainly the fast food restaurants and things like that that employ people on a part-time basis, and they were going to have to make a decision in some cases of whether they would actually be able to hire some people because if the minimum wage went too high. So we just thought it reflected badly and would be a burden on a number of businesses throughout the state. So that's sort of been our position on it.
Up in your neck of the woods, too, I'm guessing there are a lot of tourism-related businesses that were concerned about their ability to...
Very much so.
Yeah.
All of the studies that have been done, including here in New Hampshire when we've raised the minimum wage in the past, or border states where one state has raised it and the other has not, there has been no measurable impact on employment levels, and that includes among teenagers and in restaurants. And one of the other myths that's out there is that it's teenagers that are earning minimum wage, when in fact it's women, and they're very often single moms.
Senator Bradley is back on a better phone line with us. Senator Bradley, your biggest disappointments of the past 6 months?
Well, I touched briefly on the Northern Pass situation and the inability to pass legislation that would have had a modest preference for underground burial. We tried to get that through the Senate. It failed. But I have to say that I hope that there's progress being made in the discussions that are going to go on. Certainly the new CEO of PSNH, Bill Quinlan, is out listening. That's something that hadn't happened previously by the proponents of Northern Pass, so he's listening to some of the opponents, and I think there's a recognition that there are going to have to be a lot of areas of the state that will have to have mitigation measures in place, which is going to mean burial if this power from Canada is going to come into New Hampshire. I think everybody knows we need more energy resources and a diverse set of energy resources in New Hampshire, but at the same time, you can't sacrifice thousands of people's primary investment, their homes and their properties, to diminish property value with, you know, 100-plus foot towers in their backyard. So while disappointing that we weren't able to pass legislation, I'm still optimistic that eventually we're going to get to a place where it will be buried in a lot of areas, people will be protected, and we'll have access to lower-cost power.
You know, Senator Bradley, I didn't get a chance to ask you if you consider the 4-cent increase in the gas tax an accomplishment or a disappointment. How would you characterize that?
Well, I think everybody would admit that we need more money into the highway fund. Now, I sponsored legislation which actually got through the Senate but failed in the House that would have ended the so-called diversion of money from the highway fund to the Department of Safety. Currently about $80 million in every budget, which would largely make up the shortfall in the highway fund, is diverted to the Department of Safety. And to me, before you start asking hard-pressed taxpayers, and look, let's face it, gas is $3.70 a gallon now, and adding 4 cents is to an awful lot of families. And before we do that, we should end the diversion of the highway fund dollars to other state agencies. It can't happen all at once. We'll have an opportunity in the next budget to address this. That should be the response. That should be how we fix our roads and protect taxpayers at the same time.
Did you vote against the 4-cent increase, Senator
Bradley?
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah,
I
okay.
Did.
And you too, Representative Chairman.
I did, and my biggest disappointment of that was, one, the tax to a certain point, but was that this the legislature, and this was through the Republican regime, four years ago, and the Democratic one this time, has diverted, what I call diverted, $38 million from the highway fund, which goes against the law that we passed, saying we couldn't go above the 27%. And then the legislature went ahead and did that. And I think that's unfortunate. And until I think we can correct that situation and abide by the own laws that we passed, the public is not well served by this. And additionally, the other thing which concerned me greatly was that 42% of this increase is going to Route 93. Important, critical project, no question. We had given $15 million in the 10-year highway plan to finish Route 93, start down that road. I just don't think the people who are paying this 4.2 cents extra throughout the state of New Hampshire, when they go to look and see, well, is my little secondary road going to get fixed? No, it isn't, because 42% of that money is going to 93. I think those are some of the problems.
Is that a legitimate concern that we hear from other North Country reps, Representative Chandler?
I think it's always a concern. But remember, this other part of the state is the gateway to the state, which provides the people that go to the North Country and spend all of their money. of the first $32.5 million, all of that will go to roads and will go to bridges, the first $32.5 million. In the second year, 1.5 cents will be used as the payment of the $200 million we need to finish I-93. I-93 will be the gateway. I-93 will produce economic prosperity. It's the way to do it. And Jim Rausch deserves a lot of credit. Republican Jim Rausch from Derry, who had the foresight to say it's got to be done because it's needed.
Who will be outgoing, by the
He's
way, is
us.
Not running for re-election.
But
along
his
with
puppies
you,
will be back. That's the important thing.
We'll talk about that after a break, and also the upcoming cell phone ban while driving bill in just a moment.
And this is The Exchange on NHPR. It's 10:39. Good morning. I'm David Darman.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, new questions about the Taliban swap for Bo Bergdahl. Then a conversation with Piper Kerman, whose experience in prison inspired the hit Netflix series Orange is the New Black. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 until noon on NHPR.
Interesting.
And support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Meredith Village Savings Bank, proud to serve the people, businesses, and communities of central New Hampshire for over 140 years, online at mvsb.com. And Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health, 13 locations statewide, information at d-hdocs.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a look back at the legislature, a year of victories for supporters of Medicaid expansion and a higher gas tax, but disappointment for casino backers and death penalty opponents. And the year ended with several major players announcing they're getting out of the game, retiring from politics. We'll definitely talk about that in a moment. A panel of House and Senate leaders joins me for the hour, and let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. all one word. Before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask all of you about a bill that I think I would nominate perhaps Representative Chandler for most likely to affect the most number of people in New Hampshire. And that is the ban on handheld devices while driving. A lot of people use their phones while they're on the road. I'm guessing even you, given that you've got long commutes from the North Country.
That's true.
How did you vote on this bill to ban the use of handheld devices while driving?
Well, probably not surprisingly, I voted against it. But I think part of my concern is, and there's no question, there are a lot of studies, a lot of reports, and there are a lot of accidents, or a number of accidents caused by distraction driving, cell phones, but a lot of other distracted drivers too. And what I'm concerned with, I mean, you're going to be able to use, and I'm not up on this technology, trust me, I'm still of my old flip phone, but you're still going to be able to talk in your vehicle on a cell phone as long as it's part of your vehicle or the Bluetooth thing or whatever that is.
Which means I have to figure out how to do that.
Right. Well, me too, I guess. But the fact of the matter is that's most of the distracted part of it. So you're still going to be able to do that. So I'm not sure we've accomplished what we think we've accomplished here. And I think the jury's still out on that, to be perfectly honest.
It's going to be tricky to see how they
right.
put
and
this
the enforcement,
into place.
It already is against the law to if you're distracted. But it's tough to enforce, and I think the new one will be tough to enforce also.
Yeah, Senator Bradley, how about you? How did you vote on this?
Yeah, I did not support it, Laura. I thought it went a little bit too far. But here's the thing. Technology is going to solve this problem over the course of the next couple of years. Virtually everybody has a two-year plan. They can get an upgraded phone that'll be voice-activated. And they'll be able to mount it on their car and talk that way. What I didn't want to see, though, is in the interim that people that have older phones suddenly have to go out and buy a new phone before their plan is up. And so,
or pull over to the side of the road, right? That was the other argument given.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's not always that easy to
yeah.
pull over on the side of the road, even in an emergency. So I think the test will be of time. I didn't support it, but I think technology is going to solve this problem, not only in New Hampshire, but elsewhere.
I want to hear from you too, Speaker Norelli and Senator D'Alessandro. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. Again, we've got a panel of House and Senate leaders with us talking about some of the biggest bills that were passed this year and those that were not passed. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Speaker Norelli, how did you feel about this handheld use? We can't exactly say cell phones. It's all
right.
sorts of devices,
well,
GPSs and so forth.
Obviously, the House supported it, and I would say that there was a self-described libertarian who spoke on the floor of the House that probably helped carry the day when he talked about the fact that there probably isn't any call that you can't wait 5 minutes to return or pull off on the side of the road that would stand up against his child crossing the street on the way to school getting hit because you're trying to get that call. I think that
too
says,
many scary stories that,
says
that,
it,
that moved you.
Says it all. I mean, I think this is the way that other states are going. I think if it's implemented and it doesn't seem to be beneficial, that we can always take another look at it. And I would agree with Senator Bradley that technology is continuously changing and we can now do things without our hands while we're driving that'll make it much safer for us to drive.
What do you think, Senator D'Alessandro? Some people call this bill a nanny state bill. In New Hampshire, not typically seen as a nanny state. We don't require helmets or seatbelts. So
I think it was the right thing. I voted for it. I supported it. Lieutenant Shapiro of the state police brought the data to everybody that would listen to him, and I think he did a great job of presenting it in an effective and an efficient manner. So all you have to do is drive down 93 from Manchester to the Massachusetts line, note the number of accidents, the number of deaths that have taken place, and you can associate it with cell phone use. It's happened over and over again. Anything that we can do to prevent that, I think, makes sense. It's going to be difficult to handle. I don't think there's any question about that. Enforcement's always a problem. But it's got to be done. I think people should be wise enough to understand you just don't need to take either your life or someone else's life in your hands by operating a cell phone while you're driving. It's just not a good thing. It doesn't make good sense, and it makes good sense to prohibit it, and technology will take care of it. you know, as we move forward.
Do we know right how the now, governor feels about this? Is she going to sign this bill?
I would assume she'd sign it at this point. I haven't heard anything to the
negative. I just would point out again, though, that I think part of the problem is in a lot of the accidents are caused by the fact that the people are talking. That's what's distracting them. They're getting in their own world, lost in their conversation. And we haven't done anything to stop that. That's the concern that I have.
All right. Let's
but I
go
think
back
you
to
could,
our
you
listeners.
You could talk, but would you have that
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of research about is it the conversation, is it the holding the device itself?
Well, your hand is off the wheel.
Let's leave that aside for a moment because we've done a lot of shows.
Both hands on the wheel.
We probably will in the future. Peter's been waiting in Danville. Hi, Peter. Good morning. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning. Look, I want to ask a question primarily about a bill that hasn't even been recognized in the program. And the question, I think, is primarily going to Senator Bradley because SB 307 is a bill that would have simply put New Hampshire on record, along with 17 other states in the country, as favoring a constitutional amendment that would reduce the impact of big money in politics. And as much as I appreciate Jeb Bradley and all the good he's done in the legislature, I have to say that he had a lead role in watering down this bill to a point where it was meaningless as taking part in this effort nationwide. So Senator Bradley and others can join in, of course. Why did you take position on this bill that you did to water it down to just a study committee? And do you really believe that money is speech?
Okay, Peter, thanks a lot for the call. And with the elections this fall, money and politics, big topic. Senator Bradley, I'll let you take that one.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Peter. You know, the bill started out as a study, and it passed the Senate as a study. What we weren't going to say is that there was a presumption that there had to be a constitutional amendment to deal with Citizens United. Now, usually when you do a study, you don't presume the outcome of a study, and so we were willing to have the study. There was some consideration that a constitutional amendment may well be necessary, but the Senate was also very concerned that we protect everybody's rights under the First Amendment to exercise free speech. And so what actually happened in the Committee of Conference is there was agreed upon language that would have allowed the bill to go through. The four House conferees and two of the three Senate conferees had agreed on one day, and the next day came back, and suddenly the four House conferees walked away from what they had agreed to the day before, and unfortunately, a bill that should have passed and created a study committee to look at, you know, the problems that the caller, Peter, outlined, money in politics and campaign finance, you know, died because the four House conferees walked away from it. Now, that being said, another bill that did pass is a bill I sponsored, Senate Bill 120, that will lead to more disclosure of outside entities that are spending money electioneering.
And, so that
and
did
I
pass.
Hope that Governor Hassan will sign that bill.
All right. Well, Peter, thanks a lot for the call. Again, money in politics. People, I'm sure, will be paying attention to that issue as the fall elections approach. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in from Michael. He says, my comment is I want to thank the whole New Hampshire legislature for their support of the community college system of New Hampshire and the seven local community colleges in New Hampshire. As a community college professor for years, I continue to hear from students how appreciative they are to have an affordable post-secondary education option in New Hampshire. Representative Chandler, this gets back to the first year of the session, not this past year, but 2013. The budget you guys passed did include significant funding for community colleges, allowing them to lower tuition, I think, for the first time.
Yes, and I think the House in general has been very supportive of the community college system. I know I sit on the Public Works Committee, have for a long time, and we supported it there with capital projects also over the last, at least the last two or three bienniums. They've done, I think, very well through the capital budget process too, and I think it's shown that it's helped, it's worked well in the state where business and industry has come to the state and said, we need these type of jobs or training for people, and the community college has been able to adapt to that. And so it's been a good partnership.
Yeah. Again, do you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I think it's a very good partnership. And in order for a business to succeed in New Hampshire, it has to have a quality labor force. The community colleges can aid tremendously in providing that labor force. And that labor force is being worked on as we speak. The stabilization of tuition is very important. The reduction in tuition is even more important.
The freeze in tuition at the university level.
But the community college is going to reduce tuition by 5% in the next year. And again, it's a very, very valuable resource. But the key is articulation agreements. They've got to have articulation agreements so that those credits earned will be applicable to a bachelor's degree if they want to go forward.
That's the linkage, yeah.
That's the linkage. Mm-hmm. That's very important. That's critical. The late Walter Peterson and I served on a committee years ago to try to make that happen.
Yeah, well, and Speaker Norelli, we started off the hour talking about bipartisanship and how it was divided government this year for the first time in a long time. Also, this was your first session under a new governor, Maggie Hassan. After 8 years of John Lynch, how did this change the work that you did? How was her style different in terms of working with the legislature?
Well, I think one of the biggest differences is that she came out of the legislature. And I think governors that have had experience in the legislature have an understanding of just how challenging it can be, and maybe an understanding that they need the legislature's support.
Herding cats is how former Speaker Sajak used to describe it, yes.
I think that's certainly a key difference. I think if you look at the challenges that she's been faced with, while we passed a bipartisan budget and said there were a lot of things that we supported, we also had very significant back-of-the-budget cuts. And the governor and the commissioners have to oversee managing those, what we call back-of-the-budget cuts. In other words, finding all these savings, tens of millions of dollars in savings throughout the budget. And I think they've done a good job of that. I also think with the Medicaid enhancement tax, obviously that became an issue because in the last legislature, when they turned the hospital tax into a real tax by not returning any of the money to the hospitals went to court. Unfortunately, the lower court ruled in favor of the hospitals, and Governor Hassan, with executive branch members, negotiated with the hospitals to come up with something that wouldn't create a huge hole in our budget in terms of revenues. And
yeah, it was kind of scary a couple months back when hospitals voted
against
it. It
was kind of scary just a few weeks ago when it didn't look like we were going to, you know, that maybe they weren't going to be able to pull out a deal. And that's one of the reasons why the House passed the legislation that we did to sort of keep all the options on the table to make sure that if for some reason the hospitals and the state did not reach an agreement, we would have some options for dealing with such a significant budget hole.
Senator Bradley, I'd love to get your take, your Republican take on Governor Hassan and her style versus Governor Lynch, who was in for 8 years.
Well, I think that Republicans got used to working with Governor Lynch. And I have to say, I thought he did an excellent job of, because he came from the business world, of managing the budget and making sure that departments only spend 97 or 98% of their budget allotments so that money could be returned to the general fund. That is absolutely essential. When Governor Hassan came in, on the other hand, she filled all the vacant positions, and there's a very real question as to whether we're going to meet those lapse targets of money being returned to the general fund. So I think the jury is out in terms of managing the budget. On the other hand, she invested a huge amount of her credibility to try to pass casino legislation, and you know, you saw it fail three or four times. So while she does get some credit for the Medicaid enhancement tax deal, I think, you know, the deal was based on Republican principles that the tax should go down and that the money should be spent on health care. So, you know, we're having an election coming up pretty soon. Four senators who have been basically lions in the Senate. Senator O'Dell, Rausch, and Bragdon, and Senator Larson are all retiring. It's going to be a new Senate next year.
Yeah, what's that going to mean for you, Senator Bradley, real quickly?
You know, hard to say.
They'll be asking you where the men's room is.
Senate, and this is something that Senator Larson taught me very well. I mean, she was one of the most gracious people that I've ever been associated with politics. Most of us are pretty hard-boiled, and sometimes, right, Lou, we have a little edge to us.
A little edge.
but Sylvia was, somebody that when she ran the Senate and we were in the minority, we were treated fairly. And I'd like to think that, you know, myself and Senator Morse, now as Senate President, and before Senator Bragdon, that we learned from Senator Larson about how to treat people fairly. I hope Lou would agree with that. She'll be missed, as will Bob O'Dell, who he was really one of the architects of this Medicaid enhancement tax deal that came up, and he's been a respected member on both sides of the aisle. Obviously, Senator Rausch and his puppy love and his gas tax. We all love Jim. And Peter Bragdon was a great leader, especially in the last session. We had an $800 million deficit that we had to deal with.
Well, Senator Bradley, let me jump in for just a second here. I know Senator D'Alessandro has to head out early for a committee meeting. So, Senator D'Alessandro, thank you also for being with us. Now, before we go for sure, Speaker Norelli, you will not be coming back. What are your plans? This is a big, big deal. You've been in the legislature a long time.
It is a big deal for me personally and for my family. It's been just a tremendous honor to have had the trust and support of our largest state chamber in the country during my time as Speaker. And I look forward to, after taking a break and getting lots of sleep, figuring out what's next.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Representative Chandler, good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You're running for re-election.
I am.
Okay. And Senator Bradley, you too, I take it.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you all for being with us. We appreciate it. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, gardening in the Granite State. It's a short season, but one that many in New Hampshire enthusiastically embrace, whether on community plots, backyard gardens, or on a commercial scale. And now, in addition to the usual challenges, there's climate change with a longer growing season, but also new floral and faunal pests and the possibility of extreme weather. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is NHPR. The Diane Rehm Show is next. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from CCI Greenheart, seeking volunteers to host teen exchange students for a few weeks or more starting this July. Information by clicking on Host Exchange Student at ccigreenheart.org. Comcast Business, continuously investing to keep customers ahead of the technology curve. Comcast Business is built for business. More at business.comcast.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
For five Taliban detainees held at Guantanamo Bay. Berg Jotley is recovering at a military hospital in Germany. He says he does not want to speak to his family yet. Bergdahl did tell